Okay, so picture this. You're in Vegas, right? You're parched after a long day on the strip. You grab a glass of water. Seems pretty harmless, right?
Sure.
Well, what if I told you there's a good chance the water contains these tiny invisible chemicals? They're called PFAS.
Oh, yeah.
And these forever chemicals. Well, they could be coming from some pretty unexpected places. So today we're diving deep into the Las Vegas Washoe watershed. We're going to uncover the hidden sources of PFAS and what it all means for you and me.
Yeah, the Las Vegas Wash is it's really fascinating, actually. It's unique because it's mostly fed by treated wastewater,
Oh, wow.
which makes it a really, really interesting place to study, you know,
Oh.
to study how what we do, you know, everyday activities, how that impacts our water.
Right. So we're dealing with a watershed that's mostly made up of treated wastewater, and it flows into Lake Mead, which, if you don't know, provides drinking water for millions of people. It's a big deal. And our main source today is a 2024 scientific paper by Thompson and their research team. They went on this whole mission to trace PFAS in this watershed. So before we jump into what they found, can we do a quick PFAS 101 just for anyone who needs a refresher?
Yeah.
What exactly are PFAS and why do we call them forever chemicals?
So PFAS, they're a really large group of man-made chemicals. I like to imagine them as these long chains of carbon atoms, all surrounded by fluorine atoms. And it's the structure that makes them incredibly stable. They resist breaking down in the environment, which is why we call them forever chemicals, right?
Right.
And the concern is that some PFAS have been linked to health problems. And because they stick around for so long, they can build up in our bodies and in the environment.
Okay, so we have these PFAS, and they're flowing into a major drinking water source. What did Thompson's team actually learn about where these chemicals are coming from?
Well, wastewater treatment plants. We call them WWTPs. They play a big role in how PFAS get into the environment. But it's important to remember, WWTPs aren't the source of PFAS themselves. They're just receiving them from, you know, both residential and industrial wastewater.
So you're saying, like, just doing our normal things at home, that could be contributing to this whole PFAS problem.
Yeah, that's one of the most surprising findings of this paper, actually. They estimate that a significant portion of the PFAS in these treatment plants likely comes from just normal household products and activities, things like stain-resistant clothing, some food packaging, even toilet paper.
Wow, toilet paper. I never would have thought of that.
Yeah.
Makes you think about all those products we use every day without even thinking about it.
Yeah.
So how did the researchers actually figure out that residential wastewater was such a major contributor?
Well, they looked at the specific types of PFAS found in the water, and the most common were these two short-chain PFAS, perfluoropentanoic acid and perfluorohexanoic acid, PFPEA and PFHXA for short.
Catchy.
Yeah, exactly. And these are typically associated with consumer products, and they made up a whopping 80% of the total PFAS found in the Las Vegas Wash.
Wow, 80%.
Yeah, which supports the idea that most of it is coming from, you know, residential sources.
Okay, so that's everyday stuff. But then it gets more interesting because the researchers found that one specific treatment plant, WWTP1, showed signs of industrial PFAS too. What was going on there?
So WWTP1, it receives wastewater from a paper-making factory that produces, you know, those water and fat-resistant food packaging
Oh,
materials.
wow, right.
So when they analyzed the types of PFAS in the water, they found a specific chemical called 6.2-FTOH. And this chemical, it's often used in those types of products.
So it's like a chemical fingerprint leading back to the factory.
Exactly. They were able to connect the dots between the type of PFAS and the potential industrial source.
That's some serious detective work. But to keep things in perspective, how much of the PFAS is actually coming from this factory?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's important to consider the bigger picture. While this factory is contributing PFAS, it's a relatively small amount compared to all the residential sources.
Okay, so even if they stopped using these chemicals, wouldn't make a huge dent in the overall problem. So that's both reassuring and concerning. But speaking of sources, what about the airport? I've always heard about PFAS contamination being
Yeah.
linked to airports and that firefighting foam.
Yeah, airports often have higher levels of PFAS because of the use of AFFF aqueous film forming foam.
Right.
And it was commonly used for firefighting, you know, especially for jet fuel fires.
Makes sense.
So the researchers did find evidence that the main civilian airport in Las Vegas was a source of PFAS.
What kind of evidence did they find?
They looked at a channel called the Rawhide Channel, or RHC, and it drains the airport. When they tested the water in the RHC, they found significantly elevated levels of PFAS, specifically the types associated with AFFF.
Interesting.
And the levels in the RHC were actually the highest they found in the entire study, more than 10 times higher than what they saw in the main Las Vegas wash.
Wow, 10 times. So does that mean the airport's like this major source of PFAS pollution in Lake Mead?
Well, not necessarily. Remember, the RHC is just one small channel that feeds into the much larger Las Vegas wash. The researchers also found that PFAS levels decreased, like significantly, downstream of the RHC, likely because of dilution and some of the chemicals being absorbed by sediment particles.
Okay, so it gets diluted.
Exactly.
So the airport's impact on the main wash and ultimately Lake Mead. It seems to be minimal.
At least during dry weather conditions.
I mean, dry weather conditions. Yeah. Okay, so that means things change when it rains.
Yeah, that's a question we can explore a little later.
Okay.
But first, let's talk about another piece of the puzzle, groundwater. The researchers didn't just focus on surface water. They also took samples from groundwater wells near the airport.
Oh, interesting. What did they find in the groundwater? Was it contaminated too?
The highest PFAS concentrations in groundwater were found right at the airport. And the types of PFAS they found matched what they were seeing in the Rawhide Channel, you know, further connecting the airport and that AFFF contamination.
So we've got the airport as a likely source. But how did those PFAS actually get from the airport into the Rawhide Channel?
Well, the researchers, they use their findings, including those specific PFAS profiles, to kind of piece together the likely path of the contamination. And they believe that PFAS from AFFF used at the airport likely seeped into the ground, contaminating the shallow groundwater, which then flowed into the RHC.
So it's like this invisible chemical spill happening underground. The evidence is hidden, but it's there in the water sample.
Precisely. And it shows how even these seemingly localized sources can have far-reaching consequences.
Right.
But the airport wasn't the only potential source they investigated. There's another one that might surprise you. The Air Force Base.
The Air Force Base. That's right. I've read about PFAS problems they've had in the past.
Yeah, you're right. The Air Force Base has a history of PFAS contamination in its groundwater, stemming from their use of AFFF in firefighting training and, you know, actual fire incidents. So the researchers were naturally curious about whether the base might be contributing to the PFAS levels in the Las Vegas wash.
Yeah, it seems like a logical connection. So what did they find? Is the Air Force Base secretly polluting the wash?
Well, this is where the investigation takes an interesting turn. Based on their sampling, it appears that the Air Force Base isn't a significant source of PFAS to the Las Vegas wash, at least not during dry weather.
Hold on. How is that possible?
Yeah.
You said they have PFAS contamination in their groundwater?
They do, but there's a key detail here. The researchers found that there's no surface water flow connecting the base directly to the wash when it's dry.
Oh, so when it's dry, there's no connection.
Right. So even though PFAS might be present in the groundwater beneath the base, it's not flowing directly into the surface water system.
Ah, I see. So it's kind of closed off system when it's not raining. What about those other potential sources you mentioned, like leaky septic tanks and homeless encampments? Did those turn out to be major contributors to the PFAS levels?
So those other sources, while maybe not individually responsible for massive amounts of PFAS, they still contribute to the bigger picture. They found evidence of PFAS in areas with leaky septic tanks and even near homeless encampments, which highlights just how widespread this issue is.
Yeah, I'm starting to understand how complex this problem is. It's not just one big bad polluter.
Yeah.
It's all these smaller sources adding up.
Exactly. And to really grasp the extent of human impact on the watershed, the researchers used a clever technique. They tracked sucralose levels in the water.
Sucralose, like the artificial sweetener.
Oh, yeah.
What does that have to do with PFAS?
So sucralose is what we call a wastewater indicator. It's not harmful itself, but it doesn't break down easily in the environment.
Okay.
So if you find sucralose in the water, it's a pretty good sign that there's been some human wastewater input. And guess what?
Right.
They found sucralose in every single tributary they tested, even in areas that seemed pretty untouched.
So even in the desert, human waste, and by extension PFAS, is finding its way into these seemingly pristine water sources?
It is. It really emphasizes how our actions, even those everyday choices, can have a ripple effect on the environment.
Yeah.
But we're not done yet. Remember how I mentioned that rain might change the story?
Oh, right. You teased that earlier. So what happens when it rains in the Las Vegas wash? Do these PFAS levels suddenly spike?
Well, rain is pretty rare in Vegas, but when it does happen, it can completely change the dynamics of the watershed.
Oh, wow.
The researchers found that certain types of PFA, specifically 6.2 FTS and 8.2 FTS, were only present in their stormwater samples. These PFAS weren't showing up in the dry weather samples at all.
Wait, so these are totally different types of PFAS
that
only appear when it rains. Where are they coming from?
That's the big question. The researchers believe that these PFAS might be accumulating in dust and sediment during those dry periods. Then when it rains, all that dust and grime gets washed into the waterways, carrying these PFAS along with it.
So it's like a sudden burst of contamination whenever there's a storm.
You could think of it that way. It adds another layer of complexity to this whole PFAS puzzle.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. From everyday products to industrial sources, airports, the Air Force Base, leaky septic tanks, even homeless encampments, and now we're talking about PFAS hiding in dust, waiting for a rainstorm to wash them away. What I'm hearing is that this PFAS problem in the Las Vegas Wash is a lot more complicated than you might think. But before we get too overwhelmed, can we take a step back and just recap the main takeaways so far?
Of course. So we've learned that the Las Vegas Wash, being a wastewater-dominated system, presents a unique case study for PFAS contamination. And the most important finding, I think, is that the primary source of these chemicals appears to be residential wastewater. This means our everyday activities are contributing to the problem. We've also seen evidence of industrial input, though to a lesser extent. And the airport's use of AFFF has clearly impacted the surrounding environment. And perhaps most surprisingly, we've discovered that even seemingly insignificant sources, like leaky septic tanks and dust accumulation, can play a role in this complex web of contamination.
You've painted a pretty clear picture of how PFAS is making its way into this crucial water source. But the big question on everyone's mind is, what does all of this mean for the millions of people who rely on Lake Mead for their drinking water? Is it safe to drink? That's what we'll be discussing in part two of this deep dive. So make sure to tune in to find out if you should be worried about PFAS in your Las Vegas tap water. Welcome back to our deep dive into PFAS and the Las Vegas Wash.
Last time we really dug into that web of PFAS sources, everything from those household products to industrial activities, even things like dust storms.
Right. And I think it surprised a lot of us to learn that our everyday activities are a bigger part of the problem than we realize. But now the question on everyone's mind is, what does all of this mean for Lake Mead? You know it's the source of drinking water for so many people in the Southwest. Should we be concerned about PFAS in our tap water?
It's understandable to be concerned, but let's not jump to conclusions just yet. The good news is that current PFAS levels in Lake Mead are below those regulatory limits. Even after the water from the Las Vegas Wash mixes with the larger lake, the concentrations are still considered safe by current standards.
Okay, that's reassuring. But you said by current standards, does that mean those standards could change? Or that the PFAS levels in Lake Mead could rise in the future?
Yeah, those are important questions to consider. I mean, these PFAS are called forever chemicals for a reason, right?
Right.
They don't break down easily, so they can stick around in the environment and potentially build up over time.
So even if things are okay now, there's no guarantee they'll stay that way.
Exactly. There are a few factors that could lead to higher PFAS levels in Lake Mead in the future. One is drought. As the water level in the lake drops, the concentration of any existing contaminants will increase.
Right. Less water, same amount of PFAS equals higher concentration.
Exactly. And another factor is population growth. As the Las Vegas area grows, so does the amount of wastewater generated. And as we've learned, wastewater is a major source of PFAS.
So more people means more PFAS going down the drain and potentially ending up in Lake Mead. It seems like a tough problem to solve.
It's a complex issue for sure. But there are things we can do to address it. One promising development is that the FDA, they've announced a voluntary phase-out of a specific PFAS called 6.2-FTOH.
Oh, right. I remember that one.
Yeah, this chemical was found in the wastewater from that papermaking factory. So if this phase-out is successful, we could see a reduction in PFAS coming from that source, at least.
Okay, so that's a step in the right direction. But we've seen PFAS are used in so many different products, so eliminating just one chemical won't solve the whole problem.
Absolutely. It highlights the need for a multifaceted approach, you know?
Yeah.
We need to think about everything from product design and regulations to wastewater treatment technologies and even our own consumer choices.
So let's talk about solutions. What can actually be done to tackle this PFAS problem?
Yeah.
I mean, both in the Las Vegas Wash and beyond.
Well, the researchers who conducted this study, they focused on identifying the sources and pathways of contamination, but they also pointed to some potential solutions. One key strategy is source control. If we can reduce the amount of PFAS entering the environment, we can essentially turn off the tap.
Okay, but how do we turn off the tap when PFAS are in so many products?
It's a challenge for sure, but one approach is to develop and use PFAS-free alternatives. We're already seeing this happening with some products, like non-stick cookware and certain types of food packaging.
So being a conscious consumer can actually make a difference.
Yeah, consumer demand can be a powerful driver of change, and there are promising developments in replacing PFAS in those essential applications like firefighting foam as well.
Okay.
Some airports and fire departments, they're starting to use PFAS-free foams, and research into those safer alternatives is ongoing.
That's good to hear. But what about the PFAS that's already out there? Can we clean that up?
That's where treatment technologies come in. Researchers are developing and testing a variety of technologies to remove PFAS from contaminated water, soil, and even air.
Wow.
These technologies include things like activated carbon filtration, ion exchange resins, and even those advanced oxidation processes that can break down those tough PFAS molecules.
So it's like a two-pronged approach. We need to prevent new contamination
Yeah.
and clean up the mess we've already made. It sounds like a lot of
It's a
effort.
significant challenge, no doubt,
Yeah.
but I don't think it's insurmountable. We all have a role to play, from individuals making informed choices to policymakers enacting stricter regulations. We need to educate ourselves, advocate for change, and support that research into sustainable solutions.
It's empowering to know that we're not helpless.
Yeah.
We can all be part of the solution.
Absolutely. And here in Las Vegas, where water is such a precious resource, there's a real opportunity to be a leader in tackling this issue by investing in research, implementing innovative technologies, and just making responsible choices. We can ensure that Lake Mead remains a safe and sustainable source of drinking water for generations to come.
That's a great point, and a hopeful note to focus on. We've talked a lot about the risks associated with PFAS contamination. But before we wrap up this deep dive, I have one question we haven't really addressed. Are there any benefits to these forever chemicals? I mean, were they created for good reasons? Or are they simply environmental villains? We'll explore that in the final part of our episode. Welcome back to the final part of our deep dive into PFAS in the Las Vegas Wash.
So far, we've really gone deep. You know, we've
Yeah.
investigated the sources of these forever chemicals, explored the potential risks, even touched on some possible solutions.
Right. We've learned that PFAS contamination is a complex issue, and there's no easy answers. But there's one question we haven't really talked about yet. Are there any benefits to PFAS at all? I mean, were they actually developed for a reason, or are they just plain bad for the environment?
It's a great question, and it's one that often gets overlooked. The truth is, PFAS weren't created with the intent to harm the environment. They were developed because of their unique properties, properties that have actually led to some beneficial applications.
Okay, so now I'm curious, what are some of those good uses of PFAS?
One of the most notable properties is their ability to repel both water and oil. This makes them super useful in a wide range of products, from non-stick cookware to stain-resistant fabrics. You know, think about how much easier it is to clean a non-stick pan.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's thanks to PFAS.
Right, but do those everyday conveniences
Yeah.
outweigh the potential risks to our health and the environment?
That's the big question, and it's one that we as a society really need to grapple with. But it's important to remember that PFAS, they're also used in applications that go beyond those everyday conveniences. They play a crucial role in some pretty essential industries.
Like what?
Firefighting is a prime example. AFFF, the firefighting foam we talked about earlier, has been incredibly effective at putting out those dangerous jet fuel fires. It's literally saved lives
Yeah.
and prevented catastrophic damage.
Wow. So it sounds like there's a real trade-off. We have these chemicals that can be harmful, but they also have these properties that make them important in certain situations.
Exactly. It's not just firefighting either. PFAS are also used in things like medical devices, electronics, even in the production of renewable energy technologies like solar panels and wind turbines. They're essential components in a lot of the technologies that we rely on in the modern world.
So it's not as simple as just banning all PFAS. There are other things to consider.
Exactly. It's a complex issue that requires, you know, careful consideration. We need to weigh the benefits against the risks and look for solutions that minimize harm while still allowing us to benefit from these technologies.
So what does this all mean for the future of PFAS? Were we just stuck with these forever chemicals forever?
I don't think so. Science and innovation are constantly evolving. We're already seeing progress in the development of PFAS-free alternatives for a lot of applications. And as we learn more about the risks, we can make more informed decisions about how we use them and how we manage their presence in the environment.
So there's hope for the future.
Absolutely. It's not a problem we can solve overnight, but by working together, you know, fostering collaboration between scientists, policymakers, industries, and even everyday consumers, we can find a path forward, a path that balances innovation with protecting our health and the environment.
It's been quite a journey exploring this world of PFAS. We've uncovered some surprising sources, learned about the role these chemicals play, and really grappled with the complexities of those benefits and risks.
We've covered a lot of ground in this deep dive, and I think it's important to remember, PFAS contamination is a global issue. It's not just a problem for Las Vegas or Lake Mead.
That's a good point. So as we wrap up, I want to leave our listeners with one final thought. We encourage you to think about the PFAS issue in your own community. Research the regulations in your area and compare them to what we've discussed today. Are you satisfied with those standards? What steps can you take to reduce your own exposure to PFAS?
Asking those questions is a great starting point. It can spark action and hopefully lead us towards a cleaner, healthier future.
Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the world of PFAS. We hope you found it informative and thought-provoking.
Until next time, stay curious and stay engaged.